a gun in the face.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
Started 2 years of horror for an American in Venezuela.
They said, you need to give us your phone and get ready because you're coming with us.
I'm Becky Bruce, and I spent a year researching and piecing together Josh and Tammy Holt's story about their ordeal in a notorious prison.
That's when everything started to turn bad. We had another pound on the door. Boom, boom, boom. And there was the police once again.
You can binge all of the episodes of Hope and Darkness on KSLPodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Utah's best athletes count on flexibility, speed, strength.
And the Jazz pick up their 22nd assist.
So they count on University of Utah Health.
Brielle Soleil puts this game away.
And so can you. Leading doctors, a world-class environment, award-winning innovation, care to be great.
14 unanswered by the Utes.
University of Utah Health, caring for Utah's best and yours. Schedule your appointment now at uofuhealth.org/care to be great.
Attention. This is Unrivaled with Scott Mitchell and Alex Keery. Attention. With the access and insight on the teams you're passionate about.
I love it, baby.
This is 97.5 1280 The Zone, powered by KSLSports.com.
Okay, everybody, welcome back. It's Unrivaled. 97.5 1280 The Zone, The Zone Sports Network, powered by KSL Sports. Thanks for being with us on the program. Joining us right now on the program is Jeremiah Jensen from KSL 5 Television. JJ, we've got all sorts of things to talk about. Let's start with that BYU-Tennessee buyout.
Yeah.
Tennessee having the guts to pull the trigger on something Notre Dame could never do, which is just cut the check and move on. But that Tennessee game that was coming back to Provo, I think kind of comes at a good time for BYU, considering that 2023 is an insane schedule already. What do you do with that open spot now on that schedule?
Well, you find a much different opponent, right? I don't think that first year in the Big 12, you want to start it out by playing an SEC team that could be good at that point in time. For Tennessee, you know, it's good to have SEC money so you can get out of that situation. I don't think they wanted to come back to Provo. I don't think they wanted any part of that. They had a hard enough time in Knoxville. For BYU, I think it's kind of a blessing because now they have some flexibility. That schedule needed it. And so it's a win-win, I think, for both sides. I know that, you know, as a fan, you probably wanted to see Tennessee in Lavelle Edwards Stadium, but the truth is that you've already got enough great games on that schedule. That schedule's already so loaded with tough competition, you didn't need to add another one. So it gives them some flexibility to go out and get an opponent that might be, I don't know, a little bit a way to ease into that season, because that season's going to be a bear for them.
It's very unusual for an SEC school to travel, you know, yes, to travel like this. And I just wonder if Florida doesn't do it in a year when they're supposed to come out.
Oh,
to Utah.
No, they'll return that favor. Come on.
Yeah. No, they won't.
No, they won't.
No, they won't.
Wow.
They will not.
You think Florida's going to bail? You think Florida's going to bail?
Absolutely. Scott is dead on. I mean, the Utes are going to go down. I mean, I think we know what's going to happen. I mean, the Utes are pretty good. So whether it's by 3 points or 30, it's going to be, I think Utes are going to go down and win that. And why would Florida want to come back to Salt Lake City? I mean, it doesn't make any sense. So I could see the same scenario happening with Florida. So, I mean, Scott's right. You look, how many games has Alabama played outside of their footprint? It's not a conference game.
Yeah.
And they don't really need to.
They don't want to. They don't need to. All they got to do is win their league or do really well in the SEC, and they're set up. I mean, even you saw last year, two teams made the college football playoff out of the SEC. It's pretty common. So, I mean, you don't even need to win the conference to get into the playoff. There's no reason or incentive for any of those teams to leave their home stadiums or their footprint. I mean, none of those teams. I mean, I think Georgia's playing some tough games. I think they've got Oregon on the schedule or some teams like that, but very few of those teams will go outside their footprint, and very often they end up not returning the favor.
So what's a reasonable game to put on the schedule then? You've already got an FCS team in Southern Utah that's for that first year. I know, I mean, there are a lot of people who are going, Well, hey, you just said you're going to cancel your series with Utah State. I know they won't walk back and look at that. They probably won't even sniff that again just because they don't want to go back, reopen that wound again or whatever. But
right.
what would be a good, at least type of opponent for BYU in that game to replace Tennessee?
Look, I think everybody in the state wants to be a BYU-Utah game, right? But that's not going to happen.
Right.
So if you're not going to get that, then I think they need to look at a Mountain West school. Or you know, there's some other teams around the country. Maybe there's a team from the AAC. Maybe there's a MAC team they want to bring in here. I think that's the kind of opponent they have to look for. It's going to be a group of five opponent, I think. I think that schedule's still loaded. I don't see them scheduling a Power Five. I don't see them, scheduling a team.
I got it for you.
Okay, what do you got? North Dakota State?
Nope. It's a Coastal Carolina situation.
Ooh, yeah.
So
have
that return trip. Come back to Provo, and BYU's obviously going to want to try to steal one back from the Chanticleers. So
I really like that. For two reasons.
And no one's going to look at that and go, oh, what a total, you know, back in and play nobody. Because,
no.
You know, I mean, I don't know how good they're going to be next season. I mean, not this coming season, but in 2023. But, I mean, that's a game that had intrigue when it was running up to it because of how good those teams were at that moment. It's not an FCS opponent. It's not a total throwaway, but you make a team travel out pretty far and come to Provo, and maybe that's the version of a built-in win that you could get with Coastal Carolina coming to town.
You just solved Tom Homo's scheduling problem. I hope he's listening.
Call him up.
Boom. So Dallas beats Phoenix. What does that do for your mindset about the Utah Jazz? Does it enhance it? Does it give it hope for maybe this team? Do you not maybe make a lot of changes in the roster? What does Dallas winning do for you as a Jazz fan?
Been giving that some thought ever since I watched Dallas just completely dismantle the Suns in that game. I'm just still in shock about what happened in that series.
Wild.
I thought the Suns were going to win that series in five. I went on Scotty and Ann's show and said I said after game two, the Phoenix was going to win in five.
You guys ruined it. And then Scotty G tweets out the Suns are going to win this thing after they won game two, or maybe it was game four. But either way, it was game five maybe. I don't know. Either way, you guys, I think it all originated from you guys talking too much about that. You know how it works in the world.
Totally our fault. I apologize to the greater Phoenix area.
Yeah.
I had no idea Chris Paul was going to fall off a cliff. I had no idea Devin Booker was going to play so poorly in the last two games of the series. Nice. And, you know, on the other side of that is Luka Doncic, and he played like one of the top two or three players in the NBA, and the best players win these series, and that's exactly what happened. So does it change, though? I think your question was, does it change my perception of the Jazz season because now their loss to the Mavericks doesn't look as bad? No, it does not. Remember, Luka didn't play in the first three games of that series, and they lost two of those games. The Jazz problems were apparent. When watching that series, before Luka even started playing in it. Number two, I look at this Jazz season as a whole, and there's roster flaws that they have to address. Whether the Mavericks are going to lose, get swept by the Suns, or whether the Mavericks win the NBA championship, it doesn't change the issues that the Jazz have with their roster. They've got to make some fixes. They've got to make themselves more versatile. Things they said they were going to do last year but didn't. So no, my thoughts on the Jazz don't change any. I think, you know, maybe we need to take a step back and say, oh, you don't need to blow it up. Anybody that thinks you need to blow it up, I think that's a bit extreme. I think you got to try to find a way to get Donovan and Rudy to come together and try to mend or fix whatever that is. You got to get Quinn on board. Either you're staying or going and figure that out. And then after that, you can go fix these roster flaws you have, and then you're back in business and make another run. I mean, the Suns are in a similar situation as the Jazz were a year ago. How are the Suns going to react to that? So, everybody in the NBA that doesn't win a championship is going to have to try to figure out a way to get better to try to do it. So the Jazz are in that boat, and they got a lot of work to do to get there. And I think that the series against the Mavericks, no matter whether the Mavericks are the champion or not, gives the Jazz an opportunity to look at their weaknesses and get better from it.
Jeremiah Jensen joining us here on Unrivaled as we look over the weekend that was in sports. One of the fun things that we're doing on our KSLSports.com website is the Utah Jazz jersey bracket. And if you go and look at these, the stroll down memory lane is one thing, but it's not just to see the really good jerseys too. I forgot about the 2016-2017 Pride jersey that was the sleeved alternate that looked like, remember this?
Jersey.
It was sleeved. and it had the V-neck. It looked like it was a men's volleyball team going out to take the floor. Now, it's taken on a definite, like, high seed, the road primary from the early 80s to the mid-90s, which is that dark purple or that regular kind of purple and gold that you recognize that Jazz team. But for you, what's the one that kind of does it for you, JJ, when it comes to the Jazz uniform? The bracket's up. You can do the voting. You can see all these classic jerseys. But what's the one in your mind that's going to be in that top two or maybe win the thing?
Well, I've watched the Jazz for a long time, since I was a little kid. Ever since that 1984 team with Hart, I've seen all the uniforms, been through all of it. And I really, really love my favorite uniform is the white home jersey that they're, what the name of it is, but the white one they wear right now. I think it just has that traditional Jazz logo and that clean look. I really love it. My second favorite is, I'll call it, my Sunday out of games green jersey.
Oh,
remember the green and gold, the green with the gold lettering on it?
Yeah.
Oh, I love those.
It was almost like people looked at it and they went, well, what is this? Is this like a St. Patrick's Day throwback here? Like, what's going on here? But that's there are some that get, and the earned jerseys from that 2018-2019 have that same thing, dark green with the gold lettering, the gold numbers on there. But those, like, purple with the white lettering that Pistol Pete wore back in between 74-79, that was prior to Utah.
Well, purple is the primary color.
Oh, sure.
According to owner Ryan Smith. And that needs to remain in the color scheme.
Now,
so
my question is,
purple's got to be there.
Why don't we have on this list, even if it is not something that's confirmed, the possibility of the new color scheme on here? Because if you put the new color scheme on there, people would go insane.
Because it's gross. nobody wants
black, yellow, and white.
Types, right?
Black, yellow, and white. Come on.
Black, yellow, white. Look, I mean, I've seen some of the mock-ups and things that it may be or might be. Who knows whether they're leaked or not? And it just doesn't look like the Utah Jazz. And maybe I'm a traditionalist, guys. I don't know. Maybe I'm just an old guy now. But I just don't like completely going away from what I think is a really classic look. Like, would the Raiders all of a sudden, like, change their color scheme completely? I mean, why would the Yankees completely go away from navy and pinstripes? Why do we need to completely change our image and our look all the time? The Jazz have a nice classic look. I'd like to go back to those classic colors, and I loved it when Donovan Mitchell and Rudy Gobert were wearing those purples 2 or 3 years ago.
Right.
I loved it. So I'm like, I don't know. Did the Jazz need a rebrand? I mean, I don't know. But I'm old guy. I don't. My opinion doesn't matter, and I'm not the one buying all the jerseys. So, whatever. But I like the old traditional look, and so this new change is. I guess I'm showing my age, but I'm a little uncomfortable with this complete new rebrand.
See, I like the ones where when the Jazz went to the championships against the
Bulls.
You're a mountain guy.
Wow. But I am, because that's the last time they went to a championship. Let's rebirth that whole era and get back to winning championships getting there.
But do you remember the black and copper that they were wearing? Kind of it was one of their alternate jerseys. It was black jersey primarily. Copper that surrounded the lettering, that in copper down the side of the shorts, that doesn't belong, and neither do any of the versions of the team between 2004 and 2008. Like any of those, anything between then, I'm not about. And it's nothing against Carlos Boozer or Darren Williams, but those light blue jerseys, or that dark blue with light blue coloring, has no business on this thing.
I kind of like that look. Those white home jerseys back in that era were pretty. They were pretty nice.
What do they say about Utah? Like
nothing.
Colors, nothing.
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 You're right. And again, I would go back to the old traditional look. But
do you think that
I
this,
didn't hate them?
Do you think the city jerseys now, like the dark mode jerseys, do those live into the future? I mean, those are ones that are very polarizing. People either love them or they hate them.
Yeah, well, I mean, how many variations are they going to have? I'm sure that they're going to leave that open. And maybe when Ryan Smith mentioned the purple's still going to be there, maybe that's where purple fits into that rebrand. I don't know. I'm guessing, but I think that they're going to have multiple options. And with the way the NBA is nowadays, with the multiple, you got your home and your road and your alternate and your city look. So they'll probably have four different looks that they'll be able to wear with this new rebrand. So maybe we all need to be patient and wait for it to be officially released before we judge, but I'm a little skeptical.
Jeremiah, you said that no one cares about your opinion. We care about your
opinion.
That's
why you come on our show every Monday.
That's why we ask you questions.
Come on, man.
We want to know what's in your brain.
Thank you for being my soundboard. I appreciate it.
Plus, you're not that old either. Come on. Let's figure this thing out.
My kids remind me how old I am every day.
We were talking about the Kirk Herbstreit thing with him saying, yeah, maybe in the future I don't know, and I don't think it's a great thing, but what if some of these college kids could start asking for TV revenue? And some of that money in NIL is a little bit too much for these guys to handle. It could ruin their future. And I thought, all of us who worked our tails off, and I was saying about how when I came out of college, my first like real full-time gig was at KSL as a reporter, and I was making, I don't know, $31,000 or $34,000 a year. And I was like, and that's the way it is for every person who's ever graduated in journalism. They're like, I worked in this tiny market for $26,000 a year. So
you were getting paid that much when you got hired at KSL?
Hey, listen.
I got to talk to some people.
Well, you're a few years in front of me. Again, you're old guy. Remember, that was the whole...
we got paid a lot less back in my day.
No, I know you know people who are like, I worked in Anchorage for $19,000 a year.
Grand Junction, Colorado, 2004, 2005, my salary, $18,000 a year. And it was a salary. I did not get overtime. I was a salary.
Yeah.
Wow.
That I made for the year.
The teacher
grand.
The teachers are calling up and feeling sorry for you. I mean, like that was like that's a thing. It's a bad deal. I don't know how people in broadcasting get hosed so much, but
I don't
know
how we did it, but here we are.
Yeah.
We're still surviving.
Yeah, we're here. All right. JJ, we appreciate it, man. Thanks for being with us on the program.
You got it, guys. Thanks for having me.
There you go. Jeremiah Jensen, KSL 5 Television. Watch him on TV tonight. We got to take a break. Scott, when we come back, got more to go around the program. We got to talk about this Deshaun Watson thing. He's meeting with the NFL this week about his civil cases. I think it's interesting how they're going to work this thing out. I don't know how this is going to work, but the NFL is going to meet with him. You're going to see some decision come down, how much he's going to be losing on the season or how much he's going to miss on the season. Anyway, bottom line is, but he's also doing something very nice for his teammates. You don't want to miss out on what that is. Stay right here with us. Unrivaled continues, 97.5, 1280 The Zone.
A stranger with a gun came upon two teens taking pictures under a rising full moon. But violence is only the beginning of this story.
Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and I've spent my career talking about how lives are undone by violence. The Letter is a podcast about how lives are remade. Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.